right, welcome back. Earn Your Leisure, episode 19. Almost 20 weeks in.
Man. It was all a dream.
Yeah. This is crazy.
Y'all
this is crazy.
Old.
Yeah, I know. That's a fact.
Season now.
Now, we want to thank you guys for rocking with us, for supporting us. You know, it's been a tremendous journey, a hell of a ride, man.
Yeah, bro. Sure, it's all the way up.
And it just started. That's the best part. So I'm going to jump right into it. We got an extremely special guest today. Once again, somebody that – if you listen to the podcast, you know we interviewed Al Harrington, right? Yeah. And Al Harrington was somebody that we wrote a post about.
Yeah.
And then from that post, he engaged with us. And then we reached out to him and we went to L.A. and we actually had a conversation with him, right, on the podcast. So once again – similar situation, right?
You want to get the backstory on this?
The power of social media.
Yeah. The power of social media, for sure.
This is the standard procedure for us is like, I'll read articles at 5:30 in the morning. I think we spoke about that when we were with Q. And I'll go through articles and I'll find, you know, things that are very interesting and I think would relate on our page. And I came across this article about Brandon Copeland and I'm like, wait, wow, this guy's amazing. And literally as I'm reading it, there's a special on SportsCenter. And I'm like, oh, no. This guy is on the same path as us. We have to meet this guy. We have to talk to this guy. And I sent it to you like 5:30 in the morning. I know you're sleeping, but I'm like, he has to see this. And as soon as you woke up, you put the post up, and the traction was crazy.
Yeah, it was one of our biggest posts. So Brandon Copeland, if you're not familiar, he plays for the Jets, but that's only part of his story. He is a UPenn graduate. If anybody's not familiar, UPenn has one of the best business schools in the world, the Wharton School of Business. So that's, you know, separates him from a lot of NFL players. But also, he works on Wall Street during the offseason. He has a real estate investment company. And he actually is a college professor at Wharton.
Shout out to education.
So when I was reading his story, I'm like, this is crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we highlight the bad things with, you know, people make mistakes in any realm, but it seems like athletes always get highlighted the most, right? Anytime that it's a domestic violence, anything like that happens. So it's like, we need to highlight this. Like, this is just a dope story. So I put the story out, and once again, I put in the story, I'm like, yo, I would love to connect with you. And he was like, yeah, let's connect.
So I was like, what? Yes.
So I shot him a DM. And we worked it out via, emails. And now we're here. He's on our podcast. So like you said,
man.
Power of social media. So first and foremost, thank you, man.
Thank you for coming, man.
Pleasure to be here. Yeah. Pleasure to be with y'all. I love what y'all are doing, man.
Thank you, man. We're going to jump right into it. So, all right. So the theme of our show is the backstory, the financial side of sports and entertainment business as well. But we really focus on sports and entertainment a lot because we feel like, especially in our culture, people don't fully understand what goes on behind the scenes, right? Like, everybody wants to be in the NBA, NFL, or sell a million records, but they don't understand that these are businesses, right? It's the sports business, the music business, the entertainment business, right?
Yeah, that part gets left off the title.
It always does. So, you have a very interesting story, and we was reading it, the last couple of days. So you said your first contract, correct me if I'm wrong, your contract was $1.2 million, right?
Yeah.
But by the time it was all said and done, you had like 35, 40,000, right?
Yeah.
Can we just kind of break that down? Because to me, it's interesting as far as like NFL players, because you have an off season. So a lot of people aren't familiar. Like, do you get paid on the off season, or how frequent do you get paid? And then there's a thing called a jock tax where you go to different states and you get taxed differently. It's not all guaranteed. So can you kind of just break that down?
Yeah, man, there's layers to that. Layers. So so the way I think of the NFL is nothing is guaranteed unless you have certain stipulations within your contract and all of that type of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're one of those players, which is, you know, more players are seeing that, that's a great thing and a blessing to have. But when you see these big contracts, you know, Russell Wilson, $140 million. I can't remember how much guaranteed, maybe 65 or something.
Well, 65,
guaranteed, right? That's what he can bank on, right? You see the big number, but if Russell Wilson gets hurt in year 4, year 5, whatever, right, he's not seeing the rest of that money potentially. Yeah. So that's different from basketball. That's different from baseball. and other sports. So as I entered the league in 2013, I was undrafted out of the University of Pennsylvania. I remember the Baltimore Ravens called me my hometown team. I'm like, man. Actually, to be quite honest with you, I was pissed off, right? Not because I was pissed off that I didn't get drafted. That was really what it was, right? And it just had a big chip on my shoulder. So for me, I've been fortunate to just have this lens on life and perspective where I'm not really a fan of too much or anyone. So I remember as a rookie entering the locker room and this is my hometown team. These are the guys I looked up to growing up. And I remember...
This is fresh off a Super Bowl.
Fresh off a Super Bowl. Yeah. I remember actually, you know what? A perfect story that might describe me is my agent at the time, he took us out right before the draft, took us out in New York to some club up there to just celebrate that night before the draft of like all the work you put in and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, like I said, I grew up in Baltimore, that purple and black, you know. I remember being in the house and seeing them, you know, win the Super Bowl and bragging to all my roommates and all that type of stuff, wearing that with pride. And in the club, that for me was like my introduction to the NFL, even though I wasn't even in it at the time. But you had all of these different that was when the draft was still in New York. So you had all these different rappers and in different sections. My agent had gotten us a section. I wasn't spending any money. us a section. And the other guys there, well, you had Adrian Peterson with a section, Ludacris across the way, Jeezy, and there was Ray Rice. And I remember Ray Rice walked up and I remember speaking to him and I'm like, yo, I just want to say, you know, you really put on for the city. Like, that was amazing what y'all did, man. Like, I appreciate you, respect you. But in a couple of days, like, I'm going to be in the NFL too. So
it's on.
And ain't none of that fan stuff right? Like, we competition, right? But before that, I want to tell you how much I respect you. So anyway, I say all that to say that, you know, a few days later, I get the call, go to the Ravens, had that chip on my shoulder. But the weird thing about the NFL is, like I said, I've been blessed to be able to keep things in a perspective and understand that, okay, I just got this call that says, hey, you get a chance to sign up and you're a Baltimore Raven now. No, I'm not. Right. Like, there's still another step to actually make the 53 or to make practice squad or
make the roster,
whatever. Right. Yeah. Sadly, there's a lot of guys who are like, oh, I'm in it. Nah, right? Like, the next week you might be cut, or after this rookie mini camp you might be cut, right? So at that time, again, like I said, I signed a 3-year, $1.2 million deal. However, I got cut going into the actual season, made it all through preseason and all that stuff, got cut going into the actual season, and I jumped my money down to a practice squad guy. After 4 weeks, I got cut from Baltimore, so I really got 4 weeks of pay. And then, again, I mean, there were guys who got cut in the middle of training camp. There was guys who got cut after 3 days.
So,
you know?
So there's a process after you get drafted, right?
Exactly.
Because that's even a little confusing, right? There's OTAs that you have to make, team.
Yep.
Then there is training camp that you have to make the team.
Yeah.
Then you got four preseason games and so still try to make the team?
Right. So the way I would think of it is you're never really on the team. You know, depending on who you are, you're never really on the team. Like, I even joke with my students this semester and even right now, like, I could get this phone, go start ringing, they could call, be like, listen, Kobe, like, did you bring your iPad up here? Like, we going in a different route, right?
Oh,
and that's just the nature of the beast. So, like you said, every single day, I mean, they always say that every day is an interview, but, like, literally, like, I think people don't understand that. Again, depending on who you are, right? Your first round, second round, you probably are guaranteed that first year, right? But that doesn't mean you're guaranteed 3 years from now, 4 years from now, right? And that's you just hope and pray that young guys come in and understand that. Mm. And me, fortunately, I understood it. It was what motivated me to want to be great and make the team and still be here 7 years later, right? Yeah. But for a lot of guys, like I remember rookie year, some guys would go to this mall across the street from our hotel, and I remember getting on Snapchat. Snap was like big at the time, and getting on there, and they literally walking in there, selfie videos, stunting, like, hey, we about to such and such. And I'm like, bro, y'all all making the same thing I'm making right now, which is like maybe $150 after the week.
So all right. So you had a $1.2 million contract.
Yeah.
But then you 4 weeks in, you got demoted to practice team, right?
Now, so you get drafted or undrafted in the spring. So like our rookies just showed up this weekend. So where we may, whatever we are, right? Now we train, and you can be, there's guys being cut, there's guys being signed that entire time, like that roster is fluctuating. And then by the time you get to training camp, you start training camp in late July with 90 guys on the roster. Mm-hmm. That roster fluctuates a bit. And then by the end of August, beginning of September, that roster cuts down to 53.
Yeah.
And then on top of that 53, you have 10 practice squad guys. I made it from that May all the way through to August. I got cut, became one of those practice squad guys where your salary goes from a minimum of like $430,000 to $100,000. And then 4 weeks later, 4 weeks into the season, that's when I got released from the team.
And that's in Baltimore.
That's in Baltimore.
So none of that $1.2 million was guaranteed?
None.
None of it?
Not even I wish.
It looks good on paper, though.
It looks good. It sounds yeah. good. But so that's also that's the problem. That you see that headline, and then the vultures come get it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Family, everybody. Because
yeah. now it's like on paper, he's a millionaire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, but that's interesting. I think people don't fully understand that. Like, I can't drive that home. All right, you got a $1.2 million contract. None of it was guaranteed. You probably netted, how much did you net probably out of that?
Probably like 30, maybe.
That's how much you made?
From the Baltimore Ravens, probably like 30. Because in the spring, I made money in the spring. So, like, right now, you might be making, maybe a couple hundred a week because they take your hotel and stuff.
Oh, the team doesn't cover that?
They cover it, but it's coming out of your
per diem
type of thing. Wow. Right? They cover it.
Wow.
But you just don't know, you know.
Yeah.
You don't really have a – yeah. Anyway, so you make them maybe a few hundred a week, and they cover your meals and all that stuff on the weekend, so you don't really have too many expenses. But then as you get to preseason, now you're making, I want to say, $700 a week before taxes. Uh-huh. So, you know, and that's what, maybe 5 to 6 weeks. So you really like four, you know, who knows what that is, $400 a week after all the stuff is done?
Dollars.
Yeah, dollars. Yeah, yeah, yeah. $400,
no thousands. Not be confused.
And then once the season hits, as a practice squad guy, I was seeing about $4,000 after taxes. I think my check was like $7,000, $7,500 per week before, so about $4,000 after. And I did that for 4 weeks, so that's about $16,000 right there. So I probably made a little less than $30,000 from the Baltimore Ravens. And then 2 weeks later, I got cut week four. 2 weeks later, I got picked up by the Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
Practice squad with them for a bunch of weeks. Mm-hmm. I got cut by them. A lot of people don't know this, too. It's like, in my family, they understand, and it is so funny, that so at Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern is when your money is guaranteed for the week. So for me, and the way that my career has been, and I'm not superstitious, but I have certain things. I have my routine. My family knew, don't call me Tuesday after 4 p.m. Eastern, right? So, and where does that come from? Like, I've been cut at 3:56 p.m. Eastern,
wow.
right?
Yeah. So you don't get paid?
Don't get paid.
Wow.
So if you get cut at 4:01 p.m., I'm paid for that week. So when I was in Baltimore, they cut me on Wednesday morning because they were like, hey, we plan on bringing you back. Yeah. You know, we're showing good faith. You know, we like you, all that type of stuff. We just need to make some other roster changes. Blah, 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 blah. So, you know, take the time off, you know, go work, stay in shape. But we'll bring you back this week. Then, no, still waiting on that. but then Tennessee, one time, these dudes, man, it's funny. I went and did like a whole charity event for them. We went to a high school and, you know, Tennessee Titans jerseys and all that type of stuff. And on the way, not even on the way back, later on that evening, I had some rehab set up, a massage appointment, and it's 3:56. I get the call. I'm like, this random Tennessee number. Pick up the phone. Hey, man, we need you to bring in your op. Y'all knew this before you sent me on the event.
Sent you on the whole charity event and all that, and then they waited 4 minutes before the deadline to cut you so you don't get paid for the week.
4 minutes.
What about the massage? You have to cancel it or not?
To be quite honest with you, I told myself, I was like, I probably should cancel this thing because I don't know when that next check could come.
Right, right.
Like, you know what? Hey, man, you got to I probably need it right now. You know, I probably need to just relax. So,
yeah.
So my family, literally, they would know, don't call me on Tuesday. So literally at 4:01. So years later, 4:01 p.m., whenever I was good, I'd send them a bunch of gifts, a bunch of Floyd Mayweather throwing money, somebody throwing money, we count, making it rain, and all that type of stuff. And then after you get to year five, once that ball is kicked off in your first NFL game, then you're guaranteed your salary for the whole year. So, like, last year, first year.
For veterans, is year five, now you're a veteran.
Yeah, so last year was my first year having that. Yeah. So after that first game, I just sent them like 16, you know, 16 different ones, but it's a lot of that goes into it. Basically, you know, what you're getting at is there's a lot that goes into it that people don't think about. They don't understand. Yes, you see that big contract, you see that big number, and that is great, right? But what are you really getting from that? One, you got a 50% of it is gone.
Off the rip. Can we talk about that? Because people don't fully understand how taxes work, right? And they're like, well, you should set up corporations. I'm like, they're employees.
Yeah.
They get paid just like how you get paid, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't have an opportunity to defer the income. It's not an option, right?
Your boss ain't going for that.
Exactly. So because social media, a lot of times people write that, like, well, if they were smart, I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Just like, if you were smart, you would do that, right? No, you don't have that option. So automatically, 50%, because you know how your tax bracket, automatically 50% goes to taxes.
Gone.
Yeah.
Off the rip. Depending on what state you're in, it's even higher.
Right.
Then the state tax, they take that out of your paycheck every time you get paid in that particular
Yep. They'll do that. If you plan in California, so you look at the schedule, you're like, dang, I got three games in California, right?
West Coast trip.
You get taxed at that California rate. That's 13% gone.
And it's crazy because Rod Smith, shout out to Rod Smith. He's been a loyal follower from the beginning. Yeah. And anybody that doesn't know Rod Smith, he's a Hall of Famer, right?
Not yet, but a legend in Denver.
Denver
Broncos wide receiver.
Denver legend. So I put a post up a while ago, and me and him, we was commenting. He was like, yeah, but people don't realize is that, all right, California has the highest state tax in the country, right? Mm-hmm. Like 13%, like you said. Mm-hmm. But let's say you play for Miami Dolphins, Florida, right? Which Florida has no state income tax, right? So what happens is that you might practice in Florida from Monday to, let's say, Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you fly out for a Sunday game?
Saturday.
So you practice from Monday to Saturday in Florida. You are in you're in California for Saturday and Sunday, maybe like Monday morning early. So you only spend 2 days in California, but the whole week is taxed in California because that's where you played the game at.
Yeah.
So even though you prepared, like you only might only spend 48 hours in that particular state and you practiced in the state that you actually live in, but it doesn't matter. You played that game in that state. So for the whole week, that whole week's paycheck is taxed in California.
Yeah.
So you guys played Jersey state tax or is it New Jersey state tax, right? Because that's what y'all play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if New York trying to take a little bit of that too.
I'm thinking like,
New York can't take none of that. But I wouldn't be surprised. Trust me, I've seen a lot. I've seen, like you said, so when we play a team in Texas, it's like, okay, cool, right?
Yeah.
London games, London international taxes, they cost a bit too, right?
Oh, wow.
Florida teams, you know, you see Miami or Tampa Bay on your schedule, you're like, yes, Tennessee, you know, cool. Another thing, you know, a few years ago, there was a guy in the locker room when I was in Detroit. Detroit, they have the city tax and the state tax. So they'll tax you in Michigan and then they'll tax you in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so one guy got very, very smart. His financial advisor, accountant, got very, very smart with it. Because again, like you said, if you guys are going to play the game with me of like, okay, hey, I'm only here for 24 hours, you know, sometimes we fly in at 5 p.m. We out the next day at 5 p.m. after the game kickoffs at 1. You know, I'm only here for 24 hours. You're going to tax me for the whole week. I remember his issue was Detroit was taking tax every single week as if we trained there, played there, and all that stuff. Like, we were there for the whole week. So when we played with the Lions, our facility is in Allen Park. The stadium is in Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. It's like a 20-minute ride. But Detroit was trying to take taxes as if you were there every single day.
Because
they'll actually literally break down the days and be like, well, you know, you were here 100 and such and such days. So he was like, no, okay.
Yeah.
I'm actually only there out of the, what, 8 home games. I'm there Saturday night when we stay at the team hotel, and I'm there Sunday when we play. So them 180 days, nah, you got 16 of them, right? And so he ended up going back and getting some money from Detroit on that.
That's dope. So the interesting thing is, like, the way your mind's working right now, you're like, if I play in Texas, right, if I play in the Cowboys or the Texans, I know there's no state tax. How many of your counterparts have that same mind frame?
I think a lot do. Because, I mean, at that point, you're talking about thousands, right? Like, you're not talking about, like, you're talking about the difference in, you know, depending on what you're making, you're talking about the difference in, like, six extra grand by playing somewhere else versus, you know, well, I mean, some guys, I mean, the way they're getting paid, some guys, you're talking a good 15, 20 grand difference, right? So guys are thinking about it. Again, you know, not to take up all y'all time, but there's different things that people out there just don't understand, like, the fact of, like, you have to have multiple places of residency, see, right? Like, sometimes, like, you literally just have to. And I've never wanted to be that guy having, like, I'm a frugal person, right? I'm cheap. That's cool with me, right? I have no problem. I'm proud of it. But, like, I have a home base here in New Jersey. When my wife and I, when I was playing in Detroit, she works in Manhattan. And she's from here. We had home base here. So now, play with the Jets. I'm like, man, okay, like, we can just have home base. Like, and that's the crib.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Home base for me is 45 minutes away from here in no traffic. So if I wake up in the morning and it's raining hard. I remember my first day trying to come in and reporting to the Jets. It was raining hard. And my drive went from 45 minutes, no traffic. And this is like 6:30 in the morning, right? To 1 hour and 15 minutes. Now, people are like, oh, well, just wake up early and all that type of stuff. Well, guess what? If you're late to your job, you get a slap on the wrist, right? Your boss, you know, at a certain point, you can't keep being late. You'll get fired.
Yeah.
But for me, if I'm late, that's a $13,000 fine, right? Oh, wow. Like, that's, I'll go. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'll go ahead. And so last year, I had to rent a place. I have a house 40 minutes from here, and I mean, some people might be like, well, you didn't have to. No, like, for me, I had to rent a place 7 minutes.
It's not worth the risk.
Right. It's not worth the risk. It's not worth being a few minutes late. And then also, it's just the cost of doing business, right?
You're going to travel at 45 minutes.
Like I told people, it's an investment as well, right? Like 45 minutes, that's 45 minutes I could be working on my body, getting ready for the next week's game. That's 45 minutes that somebody is literally watching film on just how am I going to whoop Brandon Copeland this week, right? Mm-hmm. And I need that 45 minutes to make sure I'm prepared for him as well. So there's a bunch of different costs. You know, guys talk about transporting vehicles back and forth, right? Like, I live in California, but, you know, I'm my home base. I'm born and raised in California. I have everything over there, but now I'm with the Jets, right? How's my vehicle getting back and forth? Or am I going to Uber it every day? Or am I going to walk every day, bike every day? What about when it's snowy? So right. Do I need to pay to transport back a car back and forth? Do I need to rent a car? Do I need to buy a car? Some of these costs that we see guys with, we're like, you know, we just assume, like, oh, this guy, he's being extra. He's doing it, you know. Yeah. But some of this stuff is just a cost of, like, convenience and doing business at a high level, right? And that, you know, again, it's not a woe is us, right? I'm thankful to have those type of problems as opposed to others. But, you know, those are costs that you just can't escape from.
All right. So, yes. So now we're going to talk about, okay, we gave you a lot of gems on the athletic side, but what you like about Brandon is that he's more than just an athlete. Like LeBron says, more than just an athlete, right? So now we're going to go into the business side of things. And but before we do that, shout out to Baltimore. We didn't actually – so if you listen to our podcast, you know that A, we have deep ties to Baltimore, and some of our best interviews have been Baltimore guests, right? We have Valencia, we had Derek Falcon, who is the restaurant owner. So now we got Brandon too. So
shout out to B-more.
Shout out to the DMV.
Shout out to
B-more. Baltimore. Keep sleeping on us if you want to.
So, all right. So can we talk real estate? Because real estate is real trendy right now. And everybody wants to be a real estate investor. So can you talk about your real estate journey, your philosophy? Can you just enlighten us as far? Because there's a lot of different ways how you can make money in real estate.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. So for me, I invested in the stock market. I'm still invested in the stock market, but for me, I've realized as I've evolved is I like to have control or more control over what I invest in as opposed to the stock market where the president could say whatever he wants to say and the thing is down, 600 points or whatever. There are certain days where I feel like I make great calls on stocks and just because of the macro environment, everything was down. And I'm like, I have no control over this stuff. So for me, real estate was an opportunity to have more ownership, obviously real legitimate ownership of an asset, but then also like more ownership of the outcome. Because if I lose money and make money, whatever, like the only person I can look at is myself because I'm the one pulling the trigger on everything. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do was get into rentals. People always talk about the passive income and all that type of stuff. So I remember my wife and I, we went to Temple University. We went to Penn, but we went to Temple to look at houses and stuff just because the market at Penn was way, way, way out of my price range. And so we just went around looking at college dorms and all that type of stuff. And that was our first, like, let's get to understand what we should be looking for as we look through these homes.
That's North Philly, right?
Yep.
Shout out to Philly.
Yep. And so literally didn't act on it or move on it for about another year until there's this Baltimore. Speaking of Baltimore, there's a couple, Khalil and Kiara Ukta, they run this business called, and their Instagram is Charm City Buyers, and they've done a great job of sharing information. And I've been blessed to have great mentors. And so I reached out to them, I saw what they were doing, and they started taking me through homes and stuff like that. We went to an auction and all that type of stuff. And literally I was just a fly on the wall, seeing how they broke down properties, cap rates and all that type of stuff. And finally we were trying to invest and going on the property together. But when you're doing that, you kind of realize, well, like, on the outcome, I'm barely seeing anything. It's not really worth it. So we ended up investing in different ways. I just invested into their business and they ended up buying back a whole block of properties in Baltimore. But by doing that, it was one, I got invested in real estate. That was actually my first investment. And then two, they gave me access to what they were doing, right? Pictures, videos, just learning from that standpoint. At a certain point, like for me, I'm a quick learner and a quick, like once I'm into something, one, once you invest, then you care more about it. But then two, once I'm into something, I jump off the cliff sometimes, especially when I'm really passionate about stuff. So after that, then I went being out in Detroit. I'm like, okay, so before I buy rental units, right? Because I look at that as marriage, right? Like I'm with this house for a long time, for life, right? Mm-hmm. You can sell it, you can get rid of it. But for me, like that's marriage as opposed to let me just date for a little bit. So I was like, okay, well, let me do some flips to learn about what goes into rentals and buying and rehab and stuff. So as an athlete, one of my biggest fears and just as a person in general, my biggest pet peeve growing up was people thinking that they were smarter than me. Mm. Or not smarter than me, but thinking that I was, thinking that talking to you like you don't know what's going on type of thing, you know? Now as an athlete, that turns to having a fear of people trying to take advantage of you. And, they do this to people all the time. So for me, it was like, I need to learn how much nails cost. I need to learn how much drywall costs, how much paint costs, all that type of stuff. So that now when I do these bigger projects, you can't just come to me with like, you know, hey, to paint this house, it's going to cost $8,000, right?
You've been hands-on.
If I didn't know any better, I'm like, okay, well, $8,000, $6,000. I don't, you know, if you have no gauge, then you just take whatever people give you. So I met a guy. I found out through the locker room that there's a guy called, a guy named Rob Sims. Him, Calvin Johnson, Jason Strayhorn, they started this whole group called Locker Room Consulting Group. But at the time, that was just a thought. But Rob had, he talked about great mentors. He literally, you know, we texted, he picked me up from the facility one day and literally drove me around Detroit and walked me through houses that he was actually currently flipping, right? And he showed me the levels of stuff that he was doing. He was doing some regular single family homes. He then took me to like a big, like, 50-unit apartment building, brand new build out type of thing, and then showed me a 200-unit project that he was working on investing in Florida, right? Like, you realize there's levels. But him at the time, he also gave me access, and so he was like, "Hey, like, this is a house I'm doing. You know, if you want to get into it, you can.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need you to, right? Like, that's the best pitch in the world, right? like, you know, you." This house, I've already bought it, right? Yeah. Like, it's going to get renovated with or without you, but if you want to, more than welcome, right?
But that's the power of having mentors, right? Because he could at least expose you to that.
Exactly.
Right? And this is a guy who was a veteran, and you're a young guy in the league.
Yep.
He didn't have to do that.
Yeah, and he was retired.
Right.
He was retired at the time, and he was just like, "Cope, like, I really value what
you're
doing."
He saw something in you.
Yeah, he was like, "I wish I would have started earlier." I know he has rentals and stuff like that. Like, he rents some of his rentals out to players and stuff, like, and you know, you find yourself a mentor or mentors that you can just, one, add value to them, you know, and value is not always in the sense of money,
right?
There's a CNBC just did this commercial, and I'm talking on it about mentors, and it chopped up some of it, but one of the things I was trying to say is like, you don't have to think it's just like giving a check, right? Like, hey, like, I'll come organize your books, right? Like, I'll do whatever I need, you need me to do. Like, I'll file your paperwork, whatever you need me to do to add value to you, I'll do that just for access to your information.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of times people, we're selfish by nature, right? Mm-hmm. So people want help, mentorship, they want advice, but I heard somebody say before, like, you have to say, how can I help this person?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you think from that standpoint, then they'll be more likely to help you, as opposed to just saying, help me.
Right.
That's more of a charity thing, right?
Right.
Now, if we have an equal relationship, you might not be able to help me financially, but like you said, you can still add value.
Right. Yeah.
On some level.
Yeah.
Right?
And the thing, and that's the thing, is like, value is... Value is what you make it, right? I think that, like you said, some people just come up and say, "Hey, help me," right? Like, and it's like, okay, like, well, you have to also look at your own relationships and like anything that you're like. All of these are transactions, and either you're winning, it's equal, or you're losing. And there's only a certain amount or a certain number of relationships that you can really be just losing in. And you know,
that's the thing, right there.
At a certain point, it's like we're all for giving back. We're all for trying to help. But like, for example, with this class, I've had this class and we've gained a lot of media attention because of it. And that's been great. And I used to pride myself on literally answering everything, every DM, email, text message, all that type of stuff. Even when there'd be times where, you know, I'd make a play and it would be crazy amount of stuff in my phone. And I, even if it was a week later, I would do it. Now, like, my brother, he helps, he's my business manager, business partner. He helps me with stuff, and he realizes, cause the first couple of weeks he was like, "Nah, we can get through it." And then after a few weeks, he's like, "Yeah, nah, man. I don't really know. We might have to get a template, right?" And like, I told him, like, you know, you got to realize there's certain things. Like, I still have stuff I want to do and create, And I would literally spend all day just answering emails or DMs, yeah, right? Like,
it's a fact.
And then
it's a fact.
Tell us about it.
Like, it's like you have to pick and choose your battles, yeah, right? Yeah. And so as much as you want to give, you know, people will throw your name through the mud if you don't answer their particular message, right, or whatever, right? Right. It's like I plan on trying to answer it, but I'm gonna answer it in what I create,
right.
I think. So, yeah. But yeah, so finding the mentors and stuff like that, I ended up giving him money to invest in his house. And then even by being in that, I was able to see what I liked about how they were doing things, what I didn't like, what I wanted to do better, what I wanted to do less of, more of, alarm systems, cameras, whatever, right? Because again, there's levels, right? Yeah. And so I could realize that Rob was on this, he's on a bigger level than me, right? Yeah. Because if he loses this money, again, you know, he might be able to withstand that. Yeah. Me, I don't withstand that.
It's gonna hurt a little bit.
Right. So I need to know. Like, I need to, what's going on right now? You know, what's going on at 3:30 p.m. So from that, again, I'm invested with them. And then I went and jumped off and started doing my own. And the reason why I started doing them in Detroit was, one, the market was amazing.
Yeah.
You could buy a 3-4-bedroom, 3-bathroom house for $35,000.
That's what I wanted to ask you. So Detroit, how is the market in Detroit right now? Because I've heard mixed things. Some people think that it's like the best thing ever, but some people say it's already starting to get more saturated and it's not as, you know, good as people are making it out to be. Yeah, you had mixed opinions on it. What's the market in Detroit?
Yeah, I think it's clearly is getting more saturated than it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but that's everything, right? I if you talk to anybody in Atlanta, they'll tell you like prices here are getting more and more expensive. It's getting more and more saturated. Then you're like, okay, well, what's the rent? Well, it's like $1,100 for a 3-bedroom. You know, like, all right. Well, yeah, in comparison to New York,
exactly.
Well, shoot, I'll take that all day.
That's right? A studio.
Exactly. So I think I keep it in that perspective, in that context. For me, Detroit was an opportunity and still is an opportunity to learn on a smaller scale and not risk. And when I say small scale, it's not risk as much money as some of these
bigger markets,
these bigger shows, right? Like I would turn on one of the best houses we did in Detroit. We bought this house at auction for $36,000. Santa Rosa Drive. That's her nickname. 4-bedroom, 2.5-bathroom house. We walked into it, and this was a layup, home run type of thing. Walked into it, and it was, unfortunately, you know, it was a older woman who passed away. Her family just didn't know how to take care of it, didn't know to pay the bills or whatever. So it just literally was sitting there. We took it at auction, and well-kept house, all that type of stuff. We put in, I want to say, $12,000 just to do the kitchen, redo carpet, and to add a shower instead of the elderly tub on the first floor bathroom. We turned around. We sold it off market for $127,000, right? So
how long was that turnaround?
It literally, the longest part, it was a 2-week rehab. The longest part was waiting for the eviction to go through, because still technically, even though no one was living in it, we still legally went through the eviction process, went to court, no one showed up, waited 30 days to enter just to, you know, protect our backs. But that was the longest part. After that, we got in 2 weeks and then flipped it. So literally made 115% on my money on that. But again, I turn on HGTV and I see these couples and they're doing amazing stuff. Like, they're doing great flips and stuff like that, and you're like, you just put out $700,000 to bring back $50,000.
Yeah, I'm always looking like, yeah, it's gonna cost $799 to renovate. Yeah. I'm like, that's $800,000.
But that's interesting. Sorry, so you paid $35,000 on auction. You paid probably cash, right? But you could have got that house without paying up to $35,000, right? Probably.
Well, since it was auction, I probably could.
Okay,
I would hard money lend.
Hard money
or something like that. So I would. I paid, they would have got their money, but I probably could have came out of pocket less by finding another lender.
Yeah, because like what he's trying to say is, for the average person who might not have $35,000,
right,
but they still are interested in investing and they still want to make money, right?
Yep.
What's your advice for them? they may not have, you know, the same opportunities or this, you know,
right, the same, you know, the same bank. I'm the bank. I'm fortunate to be able to be the bank in my situations, and even still people tell me like, you want to start using other people's money. But for anyone out there trying to get in, one, I'd say make sure you're ready. And before, what I mean by that is what I found in real estate is there's a checklist of things that you need to have and be ready for, because especially if you're taking on someone else's money, and then that means you're holding on to that interest rate, you want to limit your holding time, right? What do I mean by being ready? What does your contracting team look like, right? Your contracting team can make or break your entire process. What I found, I guess this is a better way to say this. What I found is people generally can't do what they tell you they can do, right? So it's really vetting your contracting team, creating that budget, and doing your best to stick to it, even though you know you're never going to stick to it. Like, that sounds weird, but like, you know it's going to go over. So for me, my process is, well, sorry, to answer your question, there are hard money lenders out there. There's people who will lend you money. You can collateralize it with a car, house, whatever, depending on the amount of the loan. However, before you do that, you need to make sure that you're ready. And to make you feel good about it, one of my mentors, he that's outside of Rob and Charm City Buyers, one of the things that he told me that really helped me jump into my first home was he sat down with me at dinner and he was just like, you know, Cope, this isn't rocket science. He was like, a lot of people make what they do seem like it's rocket science, but this isn't. Like, you buy a house, you renovate it, put money into it to renovate it, you sell it for more, right? Like, it ain't that deep. Now, there's certain things in there that make it feel stressful and all that stuff, permits and all of this different stuff. Oh, pipe burst for all, you know. But it ain't rocket science. So for anybody listening, just keep that in mind, right? Like, you buy a house, you renovate it, you put money in, you pay people to renovate it, and you sell it for hire, right? And you, before you do that, you do all your work, your research. My process, we can get into that if we want. My process is to look at the comps. Before I ever walk into a house, is to look at the comps. It's to make sure that, like, you send me my realtor. I have multiple realtors. I tell them what I'm looking for. I tell them what my investment criteria is. Mm-hmm. And I tell them what I need to make off of it. I only look at houses that I feel like I can at least make $30K off of. Right. And, you know, some of the realtors, oh, man, that's, I don't know. Like, in Baltimore, it's getting, the margins are getting thinner, you know, cool. But don't send me the house.
I'm not interested.
Unless we can at least right. make 30K. And why do I do that? There's houses that I won't make 30K off of, even if I think that. But that gives me enough cushion where, okay, this house messed up, or this, you know, I have a change order in my contracting work, so I need to add this or whatever. And now that 30K is crunched to 25, and it's crunched to 20. And so it gives me more than enough cushion, as opposed to where some people are trying to get 15K. Yeah. And then as soon as some bad things pop up, they're in the red. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I do that. Then we'll go through a house. I go through a house with the contractor. And I get an estimate there, right? And I know that the contractor's going to be off. You know, I know that they're going to add some more later on the back end. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been fortunate to have some great contractors, especially in Maryland. In Detroit, it's been hit or miss. I've had some good ones. I've had some horrible ones, right?
Yeah.
But finding, just getting a ballpark range. Because right then and there, I might be able to be like, okay, this doesn't add up, right? After that, then you know, you put in your offer. You probably miss on half the houses you offer on. Probably really 75% of the houses I put offers in on, I haven't gotten. But you just play that game. But again, for me, it's about, I feel like real estate, and I know I'm obviously in a blessed position to be able to say this, but I tell this to my family. I tell this to everyone because I'm getting my family. They invest with me. I feel like real estate is a great thing to be in as a secondary source of income, right? Like, for me, I look at it as like, okay, like, it's a great place to be in when, you know, there is a week delay. Or, for example, I was supposed to close on a house, sell a house that we've had on the market for some time. I was supposed to sell it on May 10th, this past Friday. And it's gotten pushed. So they did the appraisal late and all that stuff is getting pushed. We just signed an addendum to push it to close before May 31st. If I needed that money right now, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
Right? I still keep it. Everybody else around me thinks that I'm pissed. Like, come on, we got to tighten this up. Right. But I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. And I'm on to the other thing. I don't need that right now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So to keep it as a secondary source of income allows you to operate in a less stressful situation. And it also allows you to not take risks and take chances and force
you don't have
investments
to.
If you don't have to, because there's a lot of people out here, that's where they get themselves in a bad situation. Like, I need this house to work. Yeah. I need to flip it now, yeah. Right? So
what makes you unique is that you're reading blueprints and you're reading playbooks too,
mm-hmm.
right? And you spoke about your family and building your team. But your family's involved, right? Your mom is part of is an yep. investor with you. Your wife
yep.
is reading the charts, and your brother is, I believe, the project manager.
Yep.
So were they into real estate, or did you bring them on and educate? You guys learned all together.
Yeah, brought them on. So I think for me, one of my biggest goals is to not figure out, but encourage other people to create wealth for themselves, right? My family is doing well for themselves. They all have their own hustles. But hey, like, I look at real estate as a way of like, hey, I can, like, I tell my friend all the time, he has student loans he's talking about. I'm like, you could flip a house, right? And start putting down chunks on your mortgage, right? He already has a job that he's been paying off. But like, I look at it as like, one day I'll just flip a house to pay for things that I want. Oh, okay, my kid has this year's tuition. Okay, well, let's do this house right here, or we need vacation, or I'm gonna flip a house to pay all of our bills.
Yeah,
right?
Like you have an asset to pay for.
Like, yeah, like I'm literally like, that's the way I look at it, right? And mm-hmm. that's a great thing to be able to do and a great goal to have. But I wanted to also empower the people around me to be able to do it themselves. So allowing them to have access to the investment. Again, I approach you, I'm doing this house. Mm-hmm. You can jump in if you want. Yeah. You can jump in if you want.
The same lesson that Rob said to you.
Exactly.
Like, you I'm going to do this. You could join.
I remember that. So that's like, one of my mentors, he had a building in Manhattan. He's a real big time real estate investor, mm-hmm. right? So he's a developer, and he had a building in Manhattan. And he called me. He's like, look, you know, if you want to get in, I'll give you the friends and family deal, da 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 da. He's like, you know, you can be part owner of a building in Manhattan, da da da. But he said, I'm giving you this offer. He said, I don't need to give you this offer. He said, and I'll never call you about it ever again.
Yeah. That's
it. Yeah. Like, so if you want in on it,
right.
It's up to you. Right. You know, I'm not going to beat your door down.
Right.
No, that I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. That's all based on facts.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. This is happening with or without you. And,
yeah.
And again, it allows them to have the same experience that I had. So now they can get their feet wet, right? I don't care if it's $1,000. I don't care if it's $4,000. I don't care if it's $20,000. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Whatever you want, you just break it down, break the percentages down. You have equity in this play.
Exactly.
And now you care. Now
so
you're interested.
People are going to care when they're invested in something.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, even if they're making $200 more,
right.
That's more passive than you had a month
right.
before.
That's more than your checking account.
Yeah.
Right, that
yeah.
you get. So, so by doing that, then it gets them to learn. And then it also, like, I'm always thinking about the future and the future build, right? And so I've invested with players, and there's a bunch of players who want to invest and do stuff together. And I've done some with them, and there's some that I'm like, you know, I just want to wait until I have my teams really, really sure,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I'm first to admit that, like, one, I'm a perfectionist, so if it ain't rolling in my version or my realm of perfection, then it ain't ready. But then once I get it there, then we can rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
But when you have that access, now I'll shoot you videos of the befores, of what the contractor's telling me, of the things that I've learned, the things that I've thought about, but I want you to start looking at stuff the way I start looking at stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the long run, again, we talk about adding value, and different ways to add value is, you know, one, I don't need your money, but two, I want, in the long run, you're adding value to me because now we're going to start to speak the same language. Yeah. Now, if I'm in New Jersey, if I'm in Baltimore and you move to Florida, or, you know, you get traded and go to California or whatever, now you're looking at a house with the same lens and perspective that I always had. So now you can say, hey, Cole, like, maybe you want to throw some money into this one.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. They branch off, and then that other effect is that people become less dependent on you.
Yep.
Because now they have their own knowledge.
100%. Well, so knowledge is power, and education is everything in this world. So that brings us to our next segment, something that we all have in common.
Education.
All right. So for the last segment, we're going to talk education. And if anybody's not familiar, this is how this whole thing started with even the podcast. Is Troy's a educator, and I'm a financial advisor. So I'll speed up this story because we've told it a couple times before, but he brought me in his classroom before, and he asked me to teach a financial literacy class. So that financial literacy class turned into, he has a program that he runs every summer, 6-week program for kids, internships, get a whole bunch of stuff, college tours and everything. They get paid at the end of the program. So that turned into me running a financial literacy program for the kids for the 6 weeks. Then that turned into me actually developing a curriculum, right? And now I actually do it in a couple other schools outside of our program that we do in the summer.
Yep.
And then that turns into I actually want to write a textbook.
It's on the way.
Right? So it could be all over. And it turned into a whole bunch of different opportunities. My brother's keeper, President Obama's program. We got
turned into this podcast.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So Empire. it all meshed together. So, as we said earlier in the podcast, Brandon is an educator as well. So he is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's business school, which is Wharton. And as I said before, that's one of the best business schools in the country. So aside from being a football player, aside from being a real estate investor, aside from working on Wall Street, we even talk about him working on Wall Street, he also, it's too much to talk about, but he's also a educator. So financial literacy is something that we're very passionate about. Can you talk about your class? Because your class is interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's called Inequity and Empowerment in Urban Financial Literacy. That's the name of it?
Yep.
So that's an interesting title. And I kind of assume I know what that means. But can you talk about the class? Can we start? Yeah, we'll start off the conversation with the class.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So technically, it's not in Wharton. It's in the urban school, urban study school, just to put that out there so they don't come down and, you know what I'm saying? But when I thought of the class, I thought about, I was actually on a ride through Detroit looking at real estate opportunities with a couple players. And one of the players mentioned in the backseat about, hey, man, I just wish when I was in college, we had a class on that, you know, talked about taxes and budgeting and houses and buying your house and all that type of stuff. I'm like, I mean, that's not just something that athletes need. That's something that we all need. Right. Like, how do you just, you had the conversation, I was like, how do you just pick athletes who you think are going to the league or not? You know, like, everybody should have that. So from there, my wheels started running. And again, like, as I said, I'm impulsive. When I get passionate about something, it's like, how do you make it happen? So it's been a few years of trying to get the school to buy in. And I was fortunate to come across my co-professor, Dr. Brian Peterson. Last year at our just college 5-year reunion, I told him about the idea, and then he took it and ran with it and dealt with the school pitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know me, I'm just a creative. So, you know, I come to you with the idea and like, yada, yada, I'm willing to put the work in behind it, but I didn't know you need a syllabus, you need a course outline and all that stuff. So anyway, for me, the class premise is like, let's talk about all the different things that you deal with in life that let's just talk about them, right? For some reason, we've gone through these schools and gone through all these, I've gone through 16 years of school myself, and no one ever taught me how to buy my first house, right?
Right.
No one ever taught me about the cost of renting or how to invest, right? We have these classes that talk about finance and statistics and all this stuff.
Supply and demand and stuff like that.
Yeah. But like, what's the real life application, you know? And I remember as an intern on Wall Street, I was like, you know, we had these classes, and I think, you know, I had these econ classes and finance classes. And I'm like, okay, I should be pretty well prepared as compared to a student who hasn't had this stuff. But then when I went into it, I'm like, yeah, we didn't talk about any of the stuff I'm seeing on a daily basis. You know,
the funny thing about that is, like, I feel the same way about education. Like, we went to school, right, and we learned we had to take all these tests and pass them to be certified. And I went to grad school for it, and I got put in New York City, and all the things that they taught, out the window.
Yeah.
You're going to learn right now.
Right.
Like, today's your day.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And one of the lessons I try to tell up-and-coming teachers is, like, listen, you're going to be tested every day. Mm. You got to really put the mindset that today I'm going to win this battle because I know I'm fighting for them.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? So, like, that's crazy. Like, you're doing that in finance, too. It's the same thing. Like, wait, I went to school for all this, and I know nothing?
Yeah. I literally have to start over, right?
Right.
And so, you know, taking that is, like, literally the premise of the class. Like, I nicknamed it Life 101. And so we talk about credit. I always felt like, too, like, I sat in these classrooms and, you know, as a kid from Baltimore learning and all that type of stuff, I've been fortunate enough. My parents valued education, so I really valued it myself. And still, even though I feel like I'm a bright individual, I would sit in some of these classes and I would have to, like, the teachers would just talk over my head however long the lecture was. And I was like, you know, people would throw around terms, good debt versus bad debt and all that stuff. And you feel afraid to ask a question, like, you know, I don't want to seem like the stupid.
Yeah, because you feel like everybody else must know.
Right, right. You know, like, he's talking like maybe I didn't get this in my high school or something, right? And then, you know, so I'd end up YouTubing it or figuring it out on my own or just through life and experience. And I'm like, it shouldn't be like that, right? Like, you're paying all this money to go to school. We should talk about this. You should feel comfortable asking this question. So that's the class. We started it. We cover everything from, like I said, investing, budgeting, taxes, your gross pay versus your net, how to buy a house. Our very last class, we had we called it Financing Your Dream Company, an entrepreneurship panel. We end up having a huge, my goal, as I tell the students, my goal is to make this financial information, financial literacy, all that type of stuff, is to make this information accessible to all for free.
Yeah.
And so this class was really a pilot and just a launching point to build and to figure out what works and all of that type of stuff. But what we did, our second to last class, we had a bunch of high school students from Philly come in, and then my students taught those students these different, we had five different topics, but taught them this stuff. And one, the reason for that was it's not that I don't care about grades, but I don't care about grades. But two, it's more of like, I feel like if you can teach someone how to teach, not how to teach. I wanted to teach them how to teach this information to other people.
That's the true sign that they learned.
Yeah. So, like, I want you to be able to share this information with your cousin, your family, your mother, your sister, your brother, and spread this information in a similar way that I'm doing it to my family. Give your family access to change their own lives, right? As opposed to, sadly, what we do in society is we get information and now it's my information. Yeah, and now I'm going to get a leg up on you. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you're not my competition, right?
Right.
So we had our students teach it to high school students because, one, I figured if you can break it down on a high school level, then you probably have a pretty good understanding of it. But two, it also just is giving us that ripple effect as a classroom. And when I tell you, you've got these, one of the biggest things that schools or people push back on is, oh man, people already know this information, you know? And you're like, no, we don't. When did I learn it? When did you teach it to me, right? Like, if nobody ever taught me, I told this to the students as well. If nobody ever taught you, if I ask you what 2 + 2 is, you're like, man, that's a stupid question, right? You've learned that. If I ask you, like, okay, well, how do you buy your first house, right? Like, what do you need? You probably need a, if I ask you, what's a 401k, right? Some people might be like, well, you should know that. How? Like, who taught
me? And that's something that, I post videos sometimes of me teaching, and it's always a couple comments like, well, financial literacy shouldn't be taught in school. We shouldn't rely on schools. People should be teaching at home. True, of course. But if your parents aren't prepared to teach you, And what about those kids?
Yeah.
And that's the vast majority of kids, right?
Yeah,
so it's like to say, okay, well, yeah, of course, everything should be taught at home. But if that's the case, what's the point of even going to school?
Yeah.
So we just teach our kids everything at home.
Like, you know what I mean? Working in the education system, right? This is like my 17th year in education. But that was part of the reason when I was like, when I saw Shadi, I'm like, look, I need your help. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a financial advisor. I need your help. Like, I know that these kids aren't learning. And I felt like I was doing a disservice. So I'm like, all right, well, I have 6 weeks to help these kids, right? And I was like, listen, I need your help. Come in and just teach these kids these lessons.
Yeah.
And it was like, when we started seeing the return on it every year, it was like, oh, this is amazing, right? So like being in a system and knowing it's a disservice, like we got to give back. So like you going back to Philly to take kids, like that's dope, right? And you're doing it at the college level, right? And our program is, you know, from high school kids getting ready for college, but also this year we're launching one for elementary school kids, right? Because the earlier they get the knowledge, now their parents can learn and these kids are learning, so they're prepared. By the time we get to high school, they're going to be advanced,
right?
So we're just trying to start earlier and earlier, right?
Yeah.
And we need more people doing that, right? So that's what drew us, like drew me for sure. Like 5:30 in the morning, I'm reading, I'm like, oh, I got to meet this guy.
Yeah.
Because he's on the same path. And I thought that was dope.
And then also, at that, my next line of question leads right into as far as giving back. Right? Mm-hmm. We spoke about that off camera a little bit. Can you talk about that as far as like the importance of that and why? Because a lot of times people don't, like you said, I think I read a book one time that we operate from an attitude of scarcity instead of abundance, meaning that it's like, okay, if me and you from the same neighborhood, you make it to the league, I'm going to be depressed because I'm like, the percentage of somebody making it is like 1 out of 100. Now you made it, so now my percentage is like
I'm done.
I can't make it statistically. It's like instead of saying like, "Yo, I'm gonna use you as an example that I can make it."
Right. Yeah.
So we look at that, and it carries over from a lot of things. Like, okay, I got $1 million. I can't teach somebody else how to make $1 million because I've already beat the odds.
Right.
So I can't diminish my odds trying to spread the wealth. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? So
it's sad. So yeah, my wife and I would start this foundation called Beyond the Basics Inc. This is. Right here, we throw football camps. We take kids on shopping sprees for Christmas, feed single parents, Thanksgiving. I think that, you know, that's just our heart and what we feel called to do. And that's actually like the best part of everything that I do, I feel like. When you talk about giving back, I share this with the students as well. I share this with people. I think that there's a lot of people in this world. This is the way I think of my life. And whether I'm right, wrong, and whatever I'm doing, I'm sharing it. And I'm letting you know that, hey, like, I don't have all the answers. Like, I told my students that the first day, I don't have all the answers, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's experts for all of this information. That's the reason why you hire an accountant. That's the reason why you hire an advisor, a financial advisor. That's the reason why you hire a credit repair specialist to handle these different tranches of your life. The reason why you hire a realtor. Like, I don't have all this information,
mm-hmm.
but I will get the people in front of you. I have a little bit about all this stuff, and anything I don't know, we'll learn it on the fly, right? Like, that's cool with me. I'll take that humble approach to teaching and to being a vessel. But what I always tell people is there's people who write these tell-all books, you know, 50-some years old, right? This is how I amass my wealth mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff, right? And there's a bunch of young kids who's reading that, well, I just read such and such book, and, you know, now I'm going to try to do it like this and this and this, right? Which is great. You know, you're sharing that wealth of knowledge. I always think that the person who wrote the book, the author's peers, at that age group are probably looking at this dude like, a dude or woman like, why didn't you just share this stuff while you were doing it?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
you could have brought us all with you.
Why didn't you tell me while you were taking these risks? So that now we can all be writing our tell-all books. We can all be on these yachts. We can all be on this stuff, right? And that's what I'm like, all right, like, let's just share as we go, right?
Yeah.
And for me, it's about taking a humble approach or making the information humble in the sense of, like, it's not overwhelming. It's not like there's certain things that are complex, you know, more complex than others. But all of this stuff is once you take some time and dive into it, you just like, what? This is, you know, this can be easy.
Yeah.
And I think that sadly, a lot of people trying to teach or a lot of people trying to, and, you know, we're not even talking about specifically giving back. But I look at the professor stuff as one of my versions of giving back.
No, for sure.
It absolutely
sure.
is.
That's education.
And a lot of people trying to teach or give information, they want you to think that what they do is rocket science.
You know why? How we can tell it's giving back? Because you're doing it, right? Those kids are being inspired, and you'll never know the impact, mm-hmm. right? But there are a bunch of athletes who are looking at you like, wow. Like, I could do that. I wish I could do that, right? And they're reaching out. Like, when we posted you, like, a bunch of athletes were like, hey.
Well, we have a lot of – shout out to the NFL. Yeah. For some reason, I don't know, but, like, half of the NFL follows us, right, on my page. So we're getting more basketball players. Shout out to Al Harrington. Shout out to a couple other league guys in the league. But I'm proud of the NFL guys because they're really taking financial literacy serious. Yeah. And they
– I don't think it's a coincidence.
No, it's definitely, right? not. And – what you said was key as far as to make the information understandable to the people. And I think that's one of the driving forces behind our podcast yep. is that people don't really want to read Barron's. And even I don't really want to read Barron's. I'm going to fall asleep when I'm reading it. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, but the information that we deliver, they know that it's like a conversation that they can have in a barbershop. Mm-hmm. Yep. But these conversations aren't being had at the barbershop.
Right.
So now they can tune in once a week and they can check it out. And the good thing about our platform is that everybody that we are bringing in are from different walks of life, different areas, but the one common denominator is that they all are willing to share time and give out free game. Mm. And that's what you just did. And it's commendable. So first and foremost, we want to thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
For coming. And can you tell the people how to contact you, any initiatives, your yeah. camp, all that information?
Yeah, man. I'll keep it short. So you can reach out to me at bcope51, BCOPE51 on Instagram. I also have a website, www.bcopeland.com. There's a contact section right there. It'll get directly to me. We have a football camp coming up this summer in Baltimore, free football camp for the youth. We'll probably have about 500 kids this year, which is crazy to see the growth. Our camp is longer than the average NFL lifespan right now. So we're going into year 4, which is crazy, but we do a lot of different, our camp is literally not about football. We have 1,000 book bags that the kids put together and 1,000 hygiene kits that the kids put together and they distribute out to their own city, right? So now we're encouraging them to give back early and understanding that it's not just writing a check. It's not about that. It's about time. It's about effort. It's about passion.
Yep.
We just continue to build this empire, continue to try to get out this financial literacy info along with you all and help change the world.
So, collaboration is better than competition. That's my man, Matt.
Shout out to Matt.
So, you know, that's what we're doing, man. That's another thing that we want to show as well, as far as we don't have to be in competition with each other. Yeah. We can work with each. It's actually more beneficial to work with somebody.
And it's fun, man. It's fun because, like, every time we sit down with a guest, like, we're learning, too.
Yeah, we learn something.
Like, we're learning as you speak. And when we listen back, we're like, wow, that's a gem. I hope everybody heard that. Or, you know what I mean? Because that's what we used to do with, like, lyrics. Like, we would listen to it, and I'm like, yo, you heard him? You heard what he said?
Right.
And then we realized we wanted that. Like, everybody didn't hear it the same way. And it was like, all right, well, that's what we're going to do to finance. Like, we're going to, wait, I don't think they're hearing it the same. So let's explain it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
decode it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Decode it.
There you go.
Y'all are doing a great job of taking the time to do that, right? A lot of people, they just spit it at you. If you pick it up, you pick it up. If you didn't, it's on you. And I think that you guys are doing an amazing job of, like you said, taking the time to decode it, taking the time to humble it. And, you know, egos out the door, creating that non-judgmental zone is crucial so that we can have these conversations. Because just by having a conversation, you end up learning. You know, you might even you go into conversation. I have conversations with people about finance now, and you're not even there was no intent in the combo. We weren't talking. We weren't supposed to be talking about real estate. We were just talking about mindset, and somehow or another, it leads to one of us learning something that might save us some money, save us some interest on the mortgage or something like that. So that's a beautiful thing. And to continue to create that environment, y'all are leading the way. So I appreciate y'all.
Thank you. Troy, you want to talk about our Patreon?
Yeah, man. So Patreon, it's doing pretty well. You know, we explain it every episode. It's a way to financially support the podcast so that we could come to your city or do things in our city, you know, that can uplift people and give them more information. You know, we have 5 different tiers. You can join at any tier. It starts at like $2 if you like for just general things. And then as you you add more to the tiers, you get more things. So we got some new members. Shout out to Cody and shout out to Terry and Savannah and T and our newest member, Vicky. Shout out to you for joining. We look forward to having a video conference with you in the very near future. Yeah, but, you know, keep supporting Patreon. Our merch is up on our website, earnyourleisure.com. You know, like I said, season two, we got some new things coming out, so be on the lookout for that.
Assets over liabilities.
Yeah, yeah. Shadi's wearing the assets over liabilities really shirt.
Shameless plug. Shameless plug. That's the slogan that we're running with.
I got the podcast t-shirt on. It's funny, like like we walk out and people look and they're like, wait, is that you on your shirt? And, you know, it's a conversation starter. Like, we know that people are looking at what we're wearing all the time. That's our culture. Like, we're going to watch to see what you have on first, and then we'll start a conversation after that. So we might as well give them a good message.
Yeah. So before we leave, my book tip of the week is I'm currently all right, Valencia, the teacher that we had on, she let the cat out the bag. I don't actually read these books. I listen to audio books, same thing. So my audio book that I'm listening to right now is called The Smartest Guys in the Room. It's about the Enron debacle scandal. So if you're into that kind of thing, I highly recommend it. It's interesting, it's entertaining, and it talks about how the financial system can go wrong and how greed can lead to very bad things. So yeah. That is my book tip.
Can I give him a quote? Because I heard Brandon say it, and I was like, oh, man, I got to give him this line. So I'm going to quote Sheik Luch from The Lock. Shout out to 914. Shout out to Yonkers. But he said, plan for your future because you're going to be older a lot longer than you're going to be younger. And I was like,
money, power, respect.
Money, power, respect, right? Because that's important, right? Like, how much time do you have to be young? Like, I think Q said that, like, at 25, are you young? Right, but you still got 50-plus years, you know, God bless, to be a functioning person in life. So you're going to be older a lot longer than you're going to be younger. So you got to plan accordingly, man.
Plan accordingly. That's a fact. So once again, thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.